Live to see it, friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-author, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. Happy Wednesday. How are you, my friend?
Man, I'm doing great. Doing great. Have our amazing show tonight. This is what we do on Wednesdays. Talk about amazing
time to get amazing.
Stuff,
so. Time to get a little amazing, and we've got some amazing. I thought it would be fun. We did a Singularity show Monday of last week to kind of revisit the accelerating future. We got our good friend Brian Wong does a blog called Next Big Future. This is Big Future Now. Tonight we're talking about trends that indicate the arrival not just of the singularity but of other major future developments that we track on the show. There are several big coming things that we talk about on the show. It's kind of the topics, the guiding master topics of The World Transform: life extension and artificial intelligence and robotics and, yes, the technological singularity and post-scarcity. And it's good once in a while to just step back and say, well, are these things really happening? Are we on a path that leads to these things? And by golly, there seem to be some indications that we are heading towards those things, and that's what we're looking at tonight.
And the author of this piece, Ray Kurzweil, we've talked about on the show many, many, many times, and he's actually been a guest on the show a couple of times. So thing about Ray Kurzweil is that he is the guy that talks about these things. But now he's working for Google. He's actually working to make some of these things happen. So he knows of which he speaks. To the extent that anyone would, he knows what the current state of the art is, and he has a good idea of what level of technology is required to accomplish what he's talking about.
Yeah, when that happened 4 or 5 years ago that Kurzweil went to work for Google, the singularity got closer when that happened, for sure.
Yeah, that's right. The future smiled on that event, I think, to some extent. So
our first story is about the singularity, and this is just actually calling back to the discussion we had about it last week. This is taken from KurzweilAI.net, and the headline is Ray Kurzweil claims singularity will happen by 2045. If you'll recall, last week we were looking at a story that says it could happen by 2029. Ray Kurzweil was at South by Southwest and said that the singularity is going to happen by 2029. He's moved up the singularity by 16 years. And while it was very interesting what was said in the article, one of the things that we noticed as we were reading it was that he never actually said that, right? He never actually said that the singularity will occur in 2029. So I thought it would be a good idea just to revisit this. And so I went
kind
to his
clear
site.
Up what he said, because we were a little bit mischaracterizing what he said, a little bit.
No, I feel that the people who wrote the headlines were mischaracterizing what Ray said.
And we were passing that along. But all right, at least I was. I'll put it that way, Phil. Here's the thing. I think some of it is a difference in the definition of what the singularity is, because I think Ray has a slightly different understanding of what the singularity is versus what I described as the singularity. When we had that, I said, well, what is the singularity? It's the arrival of greater than human intelligence on the planet Earth, right? I mean, it's like, when that happens, we've got the singularity. Well, if, by 2029, we've got artificial intelligence that is human level, then, the day after that happens, then you've got the singularity, because it won't stay at human level. It continues to move up, right? And so you got greater than human level intelligence the day after it achieves human level intelligence. So it happens quickly, and so 2029 is our year for the singularity. That's not the way Ray Kurzweil is defining it, is it? He says he's got a second date.
He says 2029 is when we have human level intelligence, and that date is very consistent. This is not a new date. I think if you dust, blow the dust off your cover of The Singularity Is Near from 2005, I believe that that's the same year, and I think that the 2045 year is the same year too. So to Ray, the window is one of about 16 years between when the first human level artificial intelligence arrives and what he describes as the singularity occurs, and that is straight from his article, when humans multiply our effective intelligence by a billion fold, merging with the intelligence we have created. So to Ray, and it could just be, this comes down to a difference between how far into the future can you see? Because the singularity is all about reaching that point where we can no longer make meaningful predictions about the future. Ray looks at it and he goes, we look at it and we go, well, 2029, human level artificial intelligence, all bets are off after that. There's no predicting. Ray goes, oh, no. You can keep predicting right up until about 2045, and that's when it falls off the map, right? That's when there is so much intelligence, so much acceleration occurring that even Ray can't say what happens beyond that point. Of course, in his book, he then goes on and continues to talk about what happens because that's Ray. But it is the distinction between saying that human-level artificial intelligence will arrive, which very likely will by 2029. I think that's probably a, if anything, feels like a conservative date at this point, doesn't it? The difference between that happening and just the total event horizon of history, which occurs a little bit later. So in some ways, I think by having the lag between the two, and who knows if it's 16 years or 16 minutes, right, between those two events, having a lag between them will help people. I think it's important for people to see that lag there, to understand that there's a distinction there. Otherwise, people are going to go, well, there it is. There's a human-level artificial intelligence, and the world's still exactly the same, right? And it's like, well, maybe it will be that week, but it won't be for long. And what it indicates on the same curve that we've been on with all other computer technology developing is that the world is heading in a completely unpredictable direction, and that's the turning point. So 2029, big turning point. 2045, all bets are off. I guess that's the important cataloging of those dates there. The singularity doesn't move up.
All bets are off for people that are of mostly original substrate human level intelligence, right? I mean, by that point, hopefully, enough of us have plugged into this stuff that we're still on top of it.
And still tracking with the future. That's right. I like that.
Yeah, but by the time we reach that point, maybe you and I, Phil, couldn't have done it, but maybe Phil and Stephen of that time can keep track because we've stayed up on things. Maybe
that's right.
That's
well, we've
hope.
Been doing podcasts the whole time, so that'll help us.
Or whatever podcasting becomes by that point, right? So
we'll be feeding stories directly into people's brains.
That's right.
At that point, it'll be pretty awesome. Okay, so there's that. The singularity is coming. Just put it in your calendars. 2029, 2045. Those mark those dates. That's important. And now let's look at some other big future happening now kinds of stories because I think there's some interesting stuff going on here. A lot of these stories, by the way, come from the Kurzweil site tonight. If you're gonna talk about the big future arriving, there's a couple of good places you can go. Next Big Future is one, and Kurzweil AI is another one. So here's this story. Future light wave computers could run 100,000 times faster. And I'll just read the lead here. Using extremely short pulses of terahertz radiation instead of electrical currents could lead to future computers that run 10 to 100,000 times faster than today's state-of-the-art electronics, according to an international team of researchers writing in the journal Nature Photonics. Let me tell you what's interesting to me about this. A couple things that really get my attention about this. One is this is another answer to the Moore's Law question. We
Right.
we've talked about the fact that Gordon Moore in 1965, I think it was, observed that the number of processors on a microchip increases, or excuse me, doubles every 18 months. And that law has been a consistent driver of the entire computer revolution for all of our lifetimes, right? For decades now, that's been in place. In the last couple of years, there has been a real concern about that law, which is not a law, it's an observation of a trend, that trend would be coming to an end, that we've reached the point where we've packed as much onto a silicon chip as we possibly can, and we're not going to see those kinds of doublings occur with chips maybe as soon as now, right? That maybe we've already hit that limit, or that we're going to hit that limit in the next couple or 3 years. And so we've looked at potential remedies to this. You know, what's the answer to that? If we don't see the continued doubling of computing power, a lot of the accelerating trends that we describe, including the one we just talked about, the singularity, is a non-starter, right? Those things can't happen unless our capabilities keep increasing. And then we've talked about different technologies that might potentially address that. The moving from CPUs to GPUs was one example. This new emphasis on quantum computing is another example. And then here's one coming from really a fairly unexpected part of the technology industry, as far as I'm concerned. You know, the folks who do photonics, they're saying, well, just forget electronics. Forget about moving electrons around inside of a chip. We're going to use light signals inside of a chip, and suddenly the computers are going to go 10 to 100,000 times faster. So you get a lot more processing power out of those kinds of speeds. And I don't know. It seems to me that this opens up, if they're right and they can deliver anything like what they're talking about here, this puts away any fears of Moore's Law dissipating anytime soon. What do you think?
Right. I agree. There's, you know, and so to some extent, the people that say that Gordon's law is going to, you know, come to an end, and to some extent they're right, because the law just speaks of putting more and more processors in a smaller and smaller space, and that increases the speed of, and capability of these processors as that happens. Mm-hmm. And to some, you know, at some point you can't do that anymore. But there's, you know, what happens is what has always happened. Before it was processors, it was vacuum tubes, you know, and other things that were that increased in capability, and then you just moved on to the next thing when you reached the limits of that last thing. Then you know we moved from vacuum tubes to transistors, from transistors to integrated circuits, et cetera. And so we'll just make a move to something that's a little different. And this is one possibility of something that's different and that will take over. And so Gordon's law will be dead at that point, but our capabilities continue to increase because of, you know,
Gordon's Moore's law, Stephen. I know you want to name the law after yourself, but come on, it's Moore's
thank
law.
You. Thank you. I knew I was saying it wrong.
Just say Stephen's law, you know, why don't you?
Well, you know, I can't
credit where it's due. Come on, you're naming it after yourself.
I think I'm going to go back and call it. We all should call something like this Ray's law, because Ray Kurzweil is the one who's saying that no, Moore was right, but he was thinking smaller than what I'm thinking. He was right about integrated circuits. With Ray, he's saying it's always been around. The universe has, you know, you can look back to the beginning of time, and the capability of computation has gone from, you know, chemical to DNA to in our brains to, you know, and every substrate has increased the capability of computation, so Moore, not Gordon. Moore is
he's
right.
Gordon Moore, but he's, you know.
Yeah. There it is. Gordon Moore.
Yeah.
So he was right, but he was looking at just that one area, and he was seeing what was happening in that area. But it's going to continue to happen after his Gordon Moore's law is done. So.
Anyway. Well, it's interesting,
thanks,
you know,
Phil.
that. Well, no, I liked it. I'll call it Phil's law from now on. I just, you took your own name and stuck it on there. I like that, that both of these laws, the Moore variation and Kurzweil's variation, which is also known as the law of accelerating returns, right? Because it's much bigger context. Both of them are really just observations. You can call them laws because they're predictive and they talk about what's going to happen next. But all Gordon Moore ever did was he said, "Look, this is happening," right? He said,
yeah.
"Look at the data. This thing is occurring," and that's what Ray does too. He says, "This
yeah.
is occurring. So let's project
you know,
this
no
out."
One would, no one has was as surprised as Gordon Moore himself as to how long this thing has gone on. I think he originally thought, and we can expect this to continue for the next 10 years. I think
yeah.
that's pretty much
yeah.
how he put it initially. But obviously, it's turned out to be a driver of so much for so long.
Had it petered out 10 years later or 20 years later, we'd be living in a very
different
world. But not only does it not seem to peter out, even on the silicon side, they seem to keep thinking up interesting new ways to do things. These new computing paradigms keep showing up, and that's really what we're looking at with this particular story. And this is basically using light to do conventional computing, but what's interesting is the signals are moving so fast that you could also do potentially quantum computing with this, which is discussed in here. So here's a methodology for creating essentially a quantum computer using what we would have thought of was a conventional microchip architecture, although sending a different kind of a signal on it. So this actually gets over my head pretty quick.
Yeah,
reading
too.
The story, I'm not going to try to draw any diagrams or anything like that. But it just goes to show you there's layers within layers of potential here. That the possibility
right.
for acceleration is both in the medium, and it's in the basic architecture, and it's in kind of the underlying physics processes that are driving the whole thing. Those are all in play, and each one of those can potentially be exploited, can potentially be leveraged in ways that we haven't looked at before, we haven't thought about before, and that can open up huge new computational capability. So if anything, we may be at the end of Moore's law because we're going to see in the coming decades a huge acceleration of acceleration that we're going to say doubling every 18 months. We're going to start doubling every 6 months or something like that. And I don't have math to back that up. I'm just saying that when you look at the space that we're in and the number of possibilities that are being considered, that's as likely as Gordon's law, as Moore's law coming to an end. That I think it's as likely that it's going to speed up as it is that it's going to go away.
Right. Right.
Okay. So what else we got?
We got two more extremely interesting stories here, Phil. Let's get to them. Transcranial alternating current stimulation used to boost working memory. So, before you apply current to your head willy-nilly, this is to be done by experts only with their equipment. So, anyway,
we always
happening?
Try to give some warnings whenever we talk about this subject, but this, kids don't try this at home. Don't just pull the
Definitely.
Cord off your lamp and jack it into your head or anything like that. But
yeah.
this has been, the research that's done in this area, we talked about it, I don't know, it's been a couple of years now or a year and a half anyway since we've done a show specifically about this. But this idea of running an electrical current across the brain to make the brain perform better is a fascinating idea. And this is just some research that shows, yep, this works. And in this instance, you can boost your working memory by adding an electric current to your brain. And this is, serious scientific research, and they show real results here, and it really does work. How close this means we are to actually having implants, having transcranial devices, I think we're still a long ways off. But we keep seeing more and more incremental evidence, work being done, showing that there's something here. And it seems to me that this speaks to the fact that eventually I think we're going to start wiring our brains up.
And to some extent we've already begun to. There are people that have suffer with just debilitating depression. they've already got devices that are basically, they've been described as pacemakers for your brain, basically, mm-hmm. That allow these people to function a little better. And it's just stimulating parts of their brain that are not working properly to allow them to experience, it's a very sad situation where you cannot feel normal joy that everyone else feels. And if it's bad enough and a medication fails, then there are people who are already using devices to allow them to function. And so that's actually already begun. But obviously there's other potential patients could be helped with different devices. Traumatic brain injury patients, stroke, epilepsy, help people not have seizures. That's that's important stuff there. So I think ultimately people that are not suffering from something like that may choose to stimulate different parts of their brains at different times. I'm about to go take a math test, Phil, let's say, and maybe I need the portion of my brain that's good with that stuff, clicking on all, really, really working well. Maybe I put something on my head to help stimulate that. I don't know.
Absolutely. Well, I think. Everything you say there is correct. To the extent that progress has been made clinically up to this point, where people are actually receiving treatments, it has been in kind of the remedial space, and there's a ton of that yet to be done. I think we'll see more and more of that. We'll see probably treatments for neurological disorders that haven't been addressed up to this point, and some of the diseases of aging and some of that kind of stuff. Part of what's interesting about this is we have so much yet to learn about the brain and how it works, but we seem to be learning quite a bit, and learning quite a bit about how even a small thing like sending a current across the brain can make this huge difference. But one of the things that's bound to happen is as this kind of research increases, is we get a better and better map of what kind of signal will boost what kind of behavior, will improve what kind of brain function. And eventually, you can almost imagine there'll be this kind of multi-purpose brain implant that people will get both for preventing or dealing with any of the conditions you just talked about, epilepsy or paralysis or any of those kinds of things, but also it's your morning cup of coffee, right? It's like, well, I have got to be on track today, so I'm just going to amp it up. Right? I'm just going to, I'm studying for a test. In the case of this research, I need my memory to really work right now, right? I really need to be able to commit this stuff to memory.
I'm about to go into a party, and I really want to be on it socially, right? I want to be able to. I want to be on my A game and not be I don't want to be the buzzkill at the party. I want to be the guy, right? So, instead of downing alcohol to be the life of the party, you put one of these things on your head. It might actually work better, right? So no lampshades on your head here, right? So
exactly, yeah. just pure brain. Pure brain.
That's right.
I think that we're going to see a lot more of this, and it's interesting that that this research keeps popping up. We're going to see more and more of this until either we all start thinking about getting brain implants, or there's a pharmacological solution that starts doing the same things, right? And it could come down to, will the chemical solutions for these be better, or will the, kind of exterior electronic solutions of this be better? Stay tuned. We'll know more later. But I'm perfectly willing to stick wires in my head if the benefits are there. Okay, our last story. This is an awfully exciting one, too.
Love this story. We saved. And to some extent, we started the show with a singularity, Phil, but I think I might be more excited about this story.
Well, this is the live to see it portion of the show right here. Okay,
right,
if you wanna,
right.
You know, if you want to live a nice, long, healthy life, you've got to take some comfort from this headline: molecule kills elderly cells, reduces signs of aging in mice. The amount of research going on to make mice live longer right now is astounding to me. We're going to have a population of mice that just, I don't know, they live for centuries.
Elderly mice,
yeah.
They're just hanging out
healthy,
and doing well.
Old, healthy mice, that's right.
Yeah.
Youthful, vital mice. This is just one of the best things. Taking damaged cells, taking cells that are old, and basically getting rid of them and letting new cells grow in place, and the effect is you got a younger mouse on your hands. You know, this is a very straightforward set of treatments that they're implementing here, and I don't know. It looks to me like it addresses all of the, you know, seven different issues of senescence that Aubrey de Grey talks about in his treatment of that idea. At the same time,
it could, Phil, because you know, and when we've had Aubrey de Grey on the show and he described what needs to be done to cure aging, basically, and he talks about the seven things that make us old and how difficult each of these problems are, right? And I asked him once, what if we solve six of the seven things? Does that help us, you know, live longer? And he says, not really. You know, you got seven bullets flying at you. If you deflect six, you're still going to die, you know? And, and they all hit you about the same time. And so, if you get hit by one of these bullets, it's still going to kill you about at the same time as you would have been killed otherwise. So you got to solve them all. And, to me, I found that just a little bit depressing because, what we're talking about is such difficult problems to solve. But what if it could all be done in one, you know, one thing could accomplish all of them? Well, that may be what we're looking at here. And they're starting human trials on this right away, aren't they, Phil? I mean, this happened, you know, we could see the beginnings of this. If this is something that pans out, we might get some treatment for aging much sooner than I had anticipated. You know, I've been one that's I've been predicting it would arrive very soon. Well, this looks like it's right on track.
This could be it. This could be, or at least a big part of the picture. What we're talking about here is a molecule it's kind of a complex chain. So I won't try to get too deep into it, but basically it's a molecule that enables other molecules introduced into the cell to eliminate the senescent cells without damaging the healthy cells and without causing other forms of damage. It really just you get the whole story if you read the article, or you get a much better picture of the article, without causing other forms of damage that those chemicals might have caused. You know, the point is, it's hard to kill just one kind of cell, but this is putting a bullseye right on those senescent cells, and it's not hurting the young vital cells. It's acting exactly as we would want a treatment of aging to behave at the cellular level. Very exciting stuff, and yeah, I'm hoping that we can see it for humans in the near future. And you know what, Stephen? We're out of time again. How does this happen? I mean, this half-hour format, I just don't know if we're going to be able to keep doing this.
I like it. It allows our listeners to have commute-sized bites of this stuff. That's true.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap it there on our big future. But don't worry, we're going to be back on Friday with a brand-new show. And, of course, we will have a dip into the archives with the best of The World Transformed tomorrow. Look forward to being with you all next time. And until next time, live to see it.